listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. This is session number 47, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host and Adam and OJ. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
I'm glad to be here. Glad to be back.
How's it going? Same here.
Good.
Yeah, it's been a minute. It's going okay. I was about to say it's been a minute. I know that last week with the thunderstorms coming through, I lost power for over an hour and a half to 2 hours on and off. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. Couldn't really do the podcast then. I know before that, OJ, you were sick. Hopefully you're better. You sound better. It's one of those things that probably just went around for a little bit.
Yeah, it took me out pretty good. It was like a flu or something, but for a couple of days, yeah, it was pretty rough.
Brutal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you don't have COVID, you know.
Took an at-home test.
Yeah, I was going to say, RIP 4 years ago.
I don't think so.
That literally just started 4 years ago. The annual reminder that we all started working from home, and I never went back after that. Still work from home.
Yeah, I'm going to need a little longer, but.
I have a new podcast from home.
Well, yeah, you might as well, right?
Might as well do everything at home, right? I like
That's part of the problem with what we live in the society, but we're not here to talk about post-COVID survival like it's the apocalypse. Let's talk about some St. Louis sports here and get into
it. I was going to say, there's other apocalypses than our sports, that's for sure.
Yeah. That is true.
Lighting themselves on fire over nothing.
Yeah.
Like, the way I see some people react about some stuff on, like, social media boards and crap, it's like, it literally reminds me of that monk in Vietnam lighting himself on fire.
Yeah.
But for something
trivial. You know what I mean? Not even like actually having a point behind the discussion.
It's because they fucking gave Ollie Marvel a 2-year extension. So if people are like, oh my God.
They're ready to burn the world. Yeah.
Well, I tell you,
so
like,
accepting of mediocrity. Dude, have you never heard of the concept of lame duck season? First of all. And then two, that's exactly the reason they gave him this contract. It does not stop them from canning his ass if things go south. Like, it's literally a nothing thing people are just getting mad about so that they can be mad about something. Now I'm getting mad about
Yeah, so let's go ahead and go a little out of order since we normally talk about the Blues. Let's talk about the Cardinals here, and then we'll come back to the Blues since you're bringing that up. OJ, I think that's a very good point. Though that obviously they were trying to avoid a lame duck situation, but I think this took a lot of people by surprise, especially for the fact that, you know, I feel if we would have gotten like Sonnen Gray, but we went out and got like a Yonemoto, obviously, you know, he hasn't looked good so far, but I'm just saying, if we got like two pitching pieces, like obviously, like we made the good moves in the offseason, you get an extension to Marmol, I think a lot of people go, what the fuck? But at the same time, they're not as pissed off as they are. It's just, to me, it's like, it did catch everybody by surprise. And I just think a lot of people, because of the, you know, the dismal year that you had last year, they just don't want him there anymore. And I think a lot of people truly want Yachty to be there in that situation. But, you know, to your point, OJ, I think that, you know, again, you're trying to avoid a situation and you can him at any point in time. But this does now, to me, it almost is like, okay, you're like, it's like Mazalak going out to Marmol, who should be feeling that he could get fired at any point in time, especially after last year. I feel like he should feel that now. Oh, you know what? We trust in you, dude. Like, and it's like, I don't know. It personifies to me what he's been doing. And, you know, last year was a mediocre team. You know what I mean? It was mediocrity. So,
yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, I just want to chime in real quick and say, at the same time, if people want to hold him accountable, then why aren't we holding, you know, Mozeliak accountable? Mm-hmm. So, his trust is going to be in Marmol. Of course, otherwise, then he's going to look like egg on his face as well. You know what I mean?
100%.
Because honestly, I think more of the blame lies there than it does with Marmol here in the long term sense of things.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the people that want Marmol gone also want Ozelek gone. Sure. But me, I think the dude deserves another year. Well, not necessarily a whole year, but he deserves a chance to prove himself still. And
You're talking about Marmol, right?
Marmol, yeah. So, like,
yeah, okay.
I think if this is the year where you basically find out if you're going to keep him as your manager. So mm-hmm. you want to set him up to succeed. You don't want to give him the short end of the stick on that. So I understand this. And a manager's salary is so minuscule, they literally can just buy the contract out and walk away. No problem at all. So
I think a little bit of the bitterness, though, at least from my perspective, it would say, okay, you got rid of Mike Schilt, though, and you put in Marmol, and you're giving him another chance. Then whatever you didn't, and well, it's like, why did? But then, I mean, Mike, under Mike's management, we had a winning record. Under Marmol, we're like 500. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
and yeah, he got canned. So you know,
I haven't heard a whole.
I'll see how it goes.
It's tough because I haven't heard a whole lot substantiated about that whole situation, and people just try and they literally just make what they want out of it, the whole Schilt getting fired thing. I've literally seen it both ways. Some people say, oh, they fired him because the front office is going all new age and stats only, and he wanted to hit old school, you know, and when he told them to throw out all the stats crap, then they went on that 17 game tear. And I've heard the other people on the other side of the thing that are all stats saying that, oh, he got fired because he was doing stupid shit. And like, I don't know. Basically, like, people kind of project their own views onto the situation because there's such a lack of actual evidence as to what happened. Sure. So I just have a tough time really thinking too much about it just because we don't know the situation at all.
Well, at the same time, right now, I think we're obviously just at this point vying, I guess, just for Central Division championships, and that's about it. Because obviously we're not spending the money, we're not putting in the product that all of these other teams that we've been seeing are putting up. And there's no way it's going to be impossible for us to compete, especially with the depth, because of the amount of talent that a lot of these teams have acquired. You know, they're just stacked, and it's going to be hard for us to even survive. Past the first round.
Cap in baseball.
There has to be, because clearly,
if you want fair competition, it can't be between the top four teams in the entire fucking league. You know, if you're running out of 32 teams, and they're talking about expanding it.
Not if the league wants to survive, because it can't just be four teams holding up the entire league in general, period. It can't just be four teams doing it. And the thing is obviously with this luxury tax, the Dodgers and the Mets and all these teams are just laughing at it and just saying, ha 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 ha, here's Bill, you know, we're spending billions of dollars. Or they'll just structure deals where they're all backloaded.
You're able to defer $480 million, so you don't even have to pay the damn luxury tax.
Exactly.
Like,
so it doesn't
affect you at all.
Yeah. So it's just like, come on, man. Like, they've got to do something about this.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this is going to be. Yeah. Otherwise, attendance is going to continue to drop.
Yeah. I mean, because the problem, I think, is that the people in charge have shifted to a whole, you know, they just want to appeal to the largest markets, focus their efforts there. And that's how they want to make their money. Whereas I think there was once a time where they tried to appeal to a wide audience. Now they're just like, all right, we're going to cater to LA, New York, Chicago. Like, you know what I mean? And, you know, maybe some Dallas, you know, every once in a while, some of those other bigger cities. But those big three are basically all they really care about getting to watch the shit, which is why ESPN only talks about that. Right.
You're not going to have a league, though, if that continues. They'll eventually.
Yeah,
just full. I mean, and that, like, we're seeing it time and time again, year after year, is that attendance is, for the most part, has been dwindling. You know.
And Adam, and real quick before we continue that discussion, your attendance has already been dropping. Period, because the sport is long, it's boring, and the generation underneath us mm-hmm. hasn't grown up with it being part of like their lives. You know, it's more football, it's more basketball. Basketball's on the rise.
Hockey is somewhat on the rise as well. I mean, there's
at least there's expansion. Have you noticed that? You don't see expansion in baseball right now.
No, but these more appealing sports when it comes to action and hell, MLS, which, you know, soccer widely is considered one of the most boring sports in America, is severely on the rise right now.
Fire. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, when you have in Kansas City now, obviously this has a lot to do with Patrick Mahomes and Brittany Mahomes. But Kansas City just opened up for the Current. They have their own stadium. So this is the first stadium for an all pro all women's sport. So they have a separate one just for them. They're not sharing a stadium. That shows you the rise of soccer as well. You know, it's just
out and they're going to
one wealthy benefactor though, in that case. Like they're not all
100%. But I'm just saying, like, okay, growing. But the fact is to your point, OJ, they have already. So the first game that they had at home was they oversold by like 500 tickets or something like that for the standing room only kind of stuff. And they're already projected to have completely sold out for most of the season for season ticket holders. So, you know, somebody else is going to come along that's not named Mahomes and go, cool, we could do this. You know what I mean?
And season tickets were up last season, I think, like almost 10% league wide.
Yeah.
And that was a league record. Yep. It was like 9%, I think. I'm just looking it up here. 9%. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, of course, the Messies and the league are helping that significantly for sure. But it's a much more popular, or it's becoming a much more popular sport. Yeah. And eventually, it's going to take over baseball as one of the top four if the way it's going.
Yeah. But I think to OJ's
because
point,
Gen Z and millennials all identify then that fan base much more than baseball fans do, sadly, and it's because they're not reaching out. They're not, they're just not. I could beat a dead horse all day long, so it is what it is.
Right. So, to OJ's point too, I think that there is consolidation when it comes to the MLB and the way that they look right now on the revenue streams. They know that the revenue stream is not going to be strong in Oakland. Obviously, that's why they're trying to get to move to Vegas. Which, by the way, fucking hilarious that now Vegas is saying, we're going to go off of this deal. So now Oakland's going, we don't want the Athletics back.
Yeah, so they're screwed. Ownership.
So what are they going to do? I think that situation is really funny. But anyways.
They're like, here's a drawing for our new stadium in Las Vegas that the mayor's like, we don't want. So anyway.
They don't want a franchise like that. But anyways. You know, like they know that they're not going to get the strength out in Tampa Bay. They know they're not going to get it. So that's when they're going to focus on, you know, as you said, OJ, the New Yorks, the Chicago's, the teams in California, Houston, the Texas Rangers, Boston, like these other bigger markets for people. And they're not really going to care about anybody else. That's what it kind of feels like right now. But the problem with it is then again, it gets to the competition standpoint. You can worry about your own revenue, but it's at some point, the entire league's in a fold, and then it's going to become like the original six in NHL. How fun would that be? Back in the day, that was fun and exciting because you had six teams, but you didn't have TV to watch them and stuff like that. So when a team was in town or you went to that town to go see a professional hockey game, it was completely different. Now it's you can watch them on TV and stuff like that. There's not as much revenue for a pull on that, so to speak. You know, it's just I just don't see how baseball is going to survive, to be quite frank, because not only were we having to make giant rule changes to increase offensive production, to decrease the amount of time that the game takes, you're also now, like, again, just to get some people interested and back into the game to be able to watch a game. The problem with that, too, is if you don't put in a salary cap, then you're going to have it to where these teams just can't afford. I mean, it's like watching minor league baseball. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like this is a game that
will create a monopoly. It's going to create a monopoly where they're just going to bankrupt everybody else. So these smaller teams are not going to be able to survive.
Yeah.
I mean, I just strongly disagree that baseball's in trouble or going to be in trouble or whatever, you know, because there are still lots of people that are fans of it. MLS has a long, long way to go before they catch up to them in numbers. So, like, even though they're growing, the disparity is still very wide.
Give it 10 years when some of the old-time people are gone and you have younger kids that are being born into it. So put it this way, right? So my brother, who is 14 years old, he knows who Lionel Messi is. He doesn't know who Arenado is. You know what I mean? He doesn't know the star on the Cardinals. but you know what I mean? But I'm just saying, like, it's something different. Like,
that's the point. But anyway, generally, you pass that fandom down. So yeah. I don't know.
Right. But so if you're not, if I'm not passing down, you know, the love of Cardinals baseball to because it's mediocre, or I feel like we're never going to be able to win a World Series because the Dodgers are going to buy one, stuff like that. And if I'm not passing that down, then eventually I'm going to instill them the sport of City because that's fun and exciting. I'm going to instill the Blues, the Battle Hawks, stuff like that. You know what I mean? And so eventually baseball in general is just going to start waning. That's the whole point, I think, that Adam and I are trying to make. It's not necessarily like, hey, in the next 5 years, they're going to
But the future,
MLB is going to be gone. But the next 30, 50 years is going to be completely different. Each new
generation is also not going to be interested in baseball.
And that's right. True. That's true. That's, I mean, no, who knows?
Then every generation from here on out is going to have attention spans of microseconds.
Hopefully not.
And that's one of the reasons why they're trying to shorten the games, is because people are bored with the game, for sure. It's taking too long.
Because they're idiots.
Not enough action.
I'm sorry. People that say there's not enough action in baseball, their attention spans are of children. They're the same as small little children.
I get that. I get that all day long.
Dude, that's your fault that you can't enjoy this. You understand that. You can't just be at peace and watch the game and focus on it at all. You have to have something happening constantly. You know, it's like a fucking child. So
at the same time, it's part of marketing, though, too. You know.
Yeah, but there's a thing about that as also I partially disagree with some of that stuff, because it's like a movie. For example, a Titanic. Titanic is 3 hours and 30 minutes long, right? And then the uncut version is 4 hours long. At some point, you look at that movie, and I like the movie. I like Titanic a lot. But there's some point you look at that and go, okay, this definitely could have been 90 minutes. There's no reason to stretch out this entire story, because it just feels like you're telling the same story over and over, or you're taking too long on certain scenes. That's what baseball is like to me sometimes, especially during the regular season.
This problem is the commercial breaks. The overabundance of commercials what stretched the game out. Because, I mean, when baseball was in its heyday, it was most games were two and a half hours. And it's because there was less commercial breaks. It's not just guys getting out there and taking 90 seconds between pitches and batters adjusting their equipment and shit. That's a small part of it compared to all the ad breaks. But they're never going to cut those out. Is what I'm saying. The business side ruins all sports. Everything is worse about every sport because of some NBA decided that they needed to change something for the good of the business. You know what I mean? So they did a good job cutting down with the pitch clock. The problem with that's going to be, does it increase pitcher injuries and that kind of stuff? Then you might want to think about some other solutions to some of this stuff. But I do think that helped. So I don't know. I think that they can adapt the game still. So that's one possibility. There's other possibilities of, like I said, other generations just having different tastes than the generation before them. I don't know. It's going to be funny to see Gen Z be the old fogies. where they're in their 30s. And I can't wait to see what the kids are doing then, because it's gonna piss them off so much.
because Gen Z, they want more engaging, fast, furious experience. That's just how it is.
What
they're used to.
Generally, some of the most cockiest for the least reason people that I've seen are Gen Z people. I think it's because they get online so early. Honestly,
they're very impulsive too. So everything.
There you go. That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that is something to do with the dopamine you get from scrolling social media and whatnot, where but I think you can recover from that too. I bet if you just
the attention span is so short. I was just looking it up. Millennials have a 12 second attention span. While that is short, Gen Zers have only an 8 second attention span. So it's getting shorter and shorter. So there you go.
Jeez. I wonder how they measure that.
Yeah. So if you don't capture something very quickly, then you're going to lose it. So that's the reason why they a lot of high scoring, a lot of action, all the time,
Well, and okay, so this is the last point that I had to bring out to it, right? So obviously we finally last year got the average of baseball games under the three hour mark, right? So, they're around 240 is what it was, 241. However, this is the point that I get it. You're 100% right, OJ, when it comes to the revenue and stuff like that, right? But the actual game time where the ball is in play or it's being pitched, on average, this was last year, is 9 minutes and 55 seconds. So you can fit the entire baseball game in 10 minutes.
Well, of course. I believe that. So, absolutely.
But the game the lasts 2 hours and 45
like 5 minutes, you know?
But that's actually, that's incorrect because I just looked it up too. So the average time of like when players are moving and stuff like that, when the play is actually being ran, it's way longer. And so obviously it's an hour long for a game. It is
different than NFL.
Agree. NFL, I mean, obviously
they're
comparing apples and oranges. I understand that, but I'm just telling you that that's part of the reason why people, I think, that the game is slow and boring is because, like, again, it can be exhilarating in those moments. We were there, you know, when Adam and I at least were, when Albert hit 698. You know what I mean? That was incredible. We were there for his last game when he hit 703. Like, yep. That was exhilarating for that second. You know, David.
Of course, those moments are amazing. I've had some of the best, my absolute best sports memories at Busch
Stadium. Baseball. 100%.
There's no 110%.
But it's a single seconds that the baseball that it has those impact, right? But if it's not going to be good product, then like you're not having those moments because last year we didn't have those moments at all. It's boring. The game is it's 9 minutes and 55 seconds.
Yeah. Then what's the point? I'm just going there to get drunk then? I mean, what's the point otherwise if you're just going to go there and get your ass stopped by the Dodgers?
That's what I'm saying. It's just a matter of taste.
Yeah.
If you can't sit there and enjoy the ball game like that, then you can listen to it. But what I find, a lot of the reason people don't like it or find it boring or whatever is because they're not watching like the little things. It can help if you actually try to like, okay, I'm going to scout this pitcher today. And like learn to scout a little bit. You can Google it. There's some good ways. There's some good resources out there for it. And then you just watch and try and see what you can pick up and see what the catcher's doing and all that kind of stuff. If you actually try to pay attention to the little things, baseball is a great sport. But if you're just looking there, if you're just sitting there watching the ball go back and forth between the pitcher and catcher waiting for somebody to put it in play, then like, yeah, it's going to seem boring. It just really depends what you get out of it. That's why. You know, that's why other factor, I think, perhaps to the demographic of the fandoms changing is that I do think there's a much larger percentage of people that are sports fans these days that never played sports themselves. And so that also influences some of this. Like they only are capable of appreciating like just the flashiest shit. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean,
actually really good. Go on, Adam.
I just want to make a point because back in the day, we would always appreciate very highly defensive games, you know, like the likes of Bob Gibson throwing, you know, amazing games and such, but there's not a lot of action in that sense, other than the fact is the ball's going back and forth, like you said, between the pitcher and the catcher. And that was very appreciated. But nowadays it's like, I just want to see home runs. I want to see action. I want to see, you know, people diving for balls. I want to see home runs, blah, blah, blah. You know, they want to see that action. Whereas before it was like people had an appreciation for that, you know, a little bit more, but go ahead, Josh.
No, and I was just going to say that, like, I totally think that you're onto something when it comes to that, OJ, because, like, as a former pitcher, right, that, like, tried to learn a lot of stuff like that, and I say former pitcher as, like, I was in the major leagues, but I didn't even pitch in high school. What I'm saying is, like, I pitched for a long time in grade school and stuff like that and idolized Roger Clemens and you know, Bob Gibson, Mariano Rivera and stuff like that. I can appreciate when I can see a good slider and stuff like that. But to me, like it doesn't move the needle a whole heck of a lot. It's like, oh, that's really cool. Like, oh, that was an excellent pitch. But it's not the same as obviously those exhilarating times, as you just pointed out, OJ, of like getting the ball in play and seeing people dive and doing all this stuff. Some of that maybe just comes from the hockey background, stuff like that. But 100%, I can at least appreciate that. And I do feel that there's a lot of people that don't even have that appreciation for the game, period.
Well, yeah. And you know, like what you're talking about with like the big plays and stuff, of course, those are like the highlights of the game, right? But I was just saying that the game's a lot more interesting when you watch the pitcher's delivery, try to decide, you know, how, you know, whether you think basically you kind of watch, look for like the head knock and all that kind of stuff. See whether you think he's got smooth delivery and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? If you take all in. And then I always like to watch where the catcher's setting up and see if the pitcher can hit the glove and all that stuff too. But yeah, I mean, yeah.
I definitely think the dedicated fans definitely find that enjoyable. And those are the dedicated fans. They really find joy in that. But the casual fans, all they want to see is offense, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's all I'm saying is that if you actually take the time to appreciate the game, then it's a lot better. That's
sure.
All.
But those are what we call the real fans for sure. But unfortunately, yeah. There's fewer and fewer of those.
Yeah, but like I said, we'll see.
Well, let's actually move off the state of baseball now and start talking a little bit about Cardinals, right, directly here. Yep. Since we talked a little bit about Marmol and stuff, you know, what's your thoughts so far on the spring training, you know, game? So right now we're 11-11. You know, Kyle Gibson's got a 10.8 ERA in 10 innings pitched. That does not look like a good sign out. And Lance Lynn is 5.79 ERA in 9.1 innings. So the two veteran guys that eat up innings just don't look like they're going to be able to eat up innings at this point. You know, Adam, I'm going to go to you first here. What's your thoughts on the spring training so far?
Yeah, I'm not too thrilled about that. I mean, looking at some of our potential, you know, up and comers, though, I was at least pleased to see that, especially now that we have a little bit more depth, especially in the outfield. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, obviously we have, you know, like the likes of Chase Davis, Travis Honeyman, Levinson, Wobin Cho, all these guys, and they're all vying for positions. And I think that that right there at least gives me at least a little bit of hope going forward, and allowing them to, you know, seeing them play in some, you know, different positions as well to enhance their adaptability has really given me some hope that perhaps we still have some hope in the future. There are a few players that don't necessarily come to mind that are probably going to make the opening day, you know, roster per se. But there were some folks like Victor Scott, for example. He looked interesting because he had pretty exceptional speed, defensive capabilities in center field. And I see that he's also very good with stolen bases as well. And he's obviously contending now for a starting position, or, you know, starting position with us. He had over 94 stolen bases last year. So, to answer your question, while I'm not so thrilled about this season yet per se, I at least have some hope. So looking at the spring for the future going forward, I'm hopeful.
It's a very good insight, as you said, that it is. There are a lot of names that we really didn't hear about last year that are starting to make some progression as well. So it does get you a little bit excited about maybe potentially in the next couple of years.
Josh Baez too, because he had a monster of a home run too. I was just looking at. That 455 foot home run. Yeah, that we couldn't watch. Yeah, so he has some serious potential, you know. But yeah. So it would be interesting to see for sure.
OJ, so what's your take so far on the spring training?
I mean, it's that who was that? Was that Allen Iverson with the we're talking about practice?
We talk about practice? Yeah. We talk about practice. Said it 16 and a half times. Yeah.
If you're really sweating spring training stats, just think that understand that you're getting worried about how dudes are doing in what is basically practice. Especially the more established vets, like they're just out there working on shit. They literally don't care about results right now. So you can't take anything away from stats. Like the best you can try and hope to do is, you know, watch the games and then glean what you can from there as far as how guys actually look, you know, like, like I said, like I learned a lot about, I think it was that Ryan Fernandez. Like when I was watching, I got a chance to watch him pitch a little bit, and like his stuff looked pretty nasty. And he had what I really liked is that he had just a really smooth, like repeatable delivery. And so I was he looks like he can pitch real well, real easy. Like he looks like he's not straining at all. And like it's stuff like that that you can pick up on, that you can actually learn something about a guy, but you have to watch. I really think you don't get much value out of spring training unless you're watching it.
And that's a very good point, OJ. You actually brought that up last year on the podcast as well. And I was kind of sitting there going, I think you're a little bit wrong to that. But I do believe that baseball is so different than any of the other sports when it comes to preseason stuff. Like for football, for example, in the NFL, you know, your starters are going to play like a quarter for the first game and then they gradually work their way up. Right. So you're starting to see some of the progression of how they look. NHL, it's the same thing where they're rotating in a lot of rookies. They're the closest I would say that to MLB would be. NBA for the preseason and stuff like that, they're mostly just playing their starters. And so there's really not as much difference. They're just not necessarily going as hard. But after you kind of made that comment, I watched a few games that I could, you know, just through streaming service and stuff like that for preseason last year. And you could see that like Miles Michaelis was clearly working on something because he threw the same pitch like three times to a guy, you know, just seeing if he can work on some stuff. And so I do notice that, right? I do believe that Lance Lynn, like, yeah, his ERA is 5.79. But I think that I saw him working through like progressional stuff where it's like, all right, in this situation, I'm going to try this instead of normally what I would do. I think Miles Michaelis has looked phenomenal, by the way. Like he has looked very primed to be like the ace. Obviously, Sonny Gray, we don't know what he's going to be because obviously the injury, which we'll talk about here in just a little bit. But I think that Miles Michaelis is like, I think he's looked fantastic. Like the way that he's worked on his progression, his speed, he's changed up his cadence. Sometimes he's taking longer. Sometimes he's going quick pitch. I like that because then it's a chess game, right? And it's the little things, right, OJ, that gets you keeping interested in the game. My thought onto that is that Kyle Gibson has looked really bad. I just don't think that he has been able to find it yet. And maybe, again, going into the season, that will change. But every single time I watch him pitch, it looks to me as if he's trying to throw it as hard as he can, if that makes sense. Like you're trying to put too much extra on it rather than letting the ball just spin, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So
I know he said something about at least his last start. He was saying there's a pitch. I forgot what pitch, but he said he just didn't have a feel for it. So he's trying to get he's working on it to try and get the feel for it and kept throwing it basically. So like you have to intentionally throwing pitches over and over again that they don't have a good feel for. Whereas in like the
regular season, you're trying to find it now because you can't do it in the regular season. Exactly right. Yeah. In the regular season, you bail on that pitch. If you don't have it, you can't throw it. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the perfect example of why you can't trust
100%.
Because from the batter's side, too, they might be having way easier of at bats than they're going to get in the regular season as well. And the pitcher's not
100%.
Trying much.
Yeah, they might be trying a different batting stance or a different grip or whatever. They also might be trying to pull more. You know, working on all sorts of stuff that the hitting coaches tell them to do. So, you know, sometimes they're flying out or just going into ground balls and stuff like that, not looking good because they're just trying different things out. You know what I mean? So they're not trying to go up there and play a regular season game. So I do believe that, you know, for MLB baseball and spring training, you know, again, 11-11, hopefully that does not reflect to like the type of team we are going to be this season. But, you know, again, as you said, like it's really going to know in the first, like, I think in the first week or two is when you really start seeing in baseball what the team has the potential to be and what they are at that point, at least. You know what I mean? Sometimes we know that you can come off with a real slow start and just get it, but you can see the potential at least. So
baseball is a long run game. So I always
it's a marathon.
About the flag day is about where, you know, kind of know who you are. So like, it might take a month before you really know much about your team.
Because
I mean, there are runs of hot and cold luck in baseball that can absolutely make your team incredible or like absolute shit.
Hey, we've been in there before. We've talked about it before about how we've gone on to win, you know,
06 and 11. Yeah.
06 and 11 were examples of that for sure. Where we only won 83 games in the regular season in 06, and we went on to win, you know.
And then the opposite happened to us in 04. You know, 04, we're one of the best teams in baseball. We have one of the most deadly lineups, and you get swept by the Red Sox, who just seem to be riding Destiny's dick at that point. You know what I mean? To win 7 games in a row after being 3 down. Yeah,
100%. But at the same time, it certainly, whenever you're looking, you know, 1,000 feet up, so to speak, and you're looking at it, God damn, how do we stand a chance against some of these teams, you know?
Except, you know, I've seen it. It's just hard with where I've seen what I've seen them do against supposedly like unstoppable competition.
You're right.
Just, hard for me to take it too seriously when the Mets go out and throw, blow a bunch of money on stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, we've seen him choke before.
So yeah.
That's the reason why OJ is the optimist of the group here. So there you go.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that has to go actually into the next segment that we'll talk about too, is the thing about it is you can sign all these players, but if you get injuries, that you're shot.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't matter at that point in time. It's always going to be the what if team rather than, you know, the team that could get it taken care of. And that's kind of where we have now. There's three big names that we have on our injury list, and Lars Nootbaar, Tommy Edman, and obviously Sonny Gray. But these injuries, we obviously Sonny Gray won't be available to pitch in the opening day, but there is thoughts that he could potentially pitch in the opening weekend. You know, I'm not too sure about Edmund. I haven't really seen a whole lot of reports to him. Newt, I don't think it's necessarily too far off.
He's still recovering, I think, from the wrist surgery. Yeah. I don't think he has a real timeline yet.
They actually downgrade. Yeah, he actually had to stop hitting off the tee for a while. Like it's going to linger, it looks like. So that sucks.
Yeah. Right? I mean, he had the surgery back in October, and he still has lingering inflammation and swelling in that wrist.
Apparently, it was supposed to be something that wasn't that big a deal, but the wrist is the wrist, man. That's a complicated area for sure.
And then with Nootbaar, you know, he had those displaced fractured ribs or no, they were not displaced. I think they were
fractured.
Yeah. They were fractured ribs on his on a left side there or whatever. And it's been,
I can tell you as a guy that has cracked a rib or two in my day, I think I cracked two. One, I know for a fact I cracked. And the other one, I'm pretty sure I did. But one, I definitely cracked. It is unbelievably painful. For anybody that hasn't had that, it's hard to breathe. Like, it feels like there's someone it doesn't feel like an elephant sitting on your chest. It feels like my little dog, Oshi, which is 15 pounds, that's sitting on your chest. That doesn't sound like that big of a deal, but over time, especially when you're laying down or you're trying to do something, it's just constantly there. When you're laughing, it's the worst because you're moving so many muscles in there. Oh my God, it's so freaking painful.
And I think that's really going to determine, you know, when he comes back, is this going to be, well, first of all, the healing process, but also his pain tolerance.
Yeah.
100%.
That's
110%. So, and then, I think we also have a couple others as well. Well, you mentioned Sonny Gray as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's still hope that he might actually, you know, come through. I mean, he did actually, he's through, I think, I'm taking a look here. He threw four side session on March 20th, and he's scheduled to face minor league hitters tomorrow. So if he passes tests, apparently he could be slotted into a regular rotation. So it's day by day right now, but
Which is obviously positive for us.
It is. I mean, far we still have a little bit before our official opener. What is it, like 28th? So we got like a week away. So tomorrow is going to be a real test to see how well he's doing. But he's obviously hopeful that he'll make a start, you know, during the season opening trip, you know, the 7-game road trip that we're going to be on out west. Drew Rahm, he's out, been shut down.
There's other ones. Those were just like the three big names that obviously popped out.
I'm just taking a look at a few others,
Pacquiao and stuff like that. And dude, by the way, so when I was looking up on ESPN the injury report, I thought it was funny. So like Pacquiao, when it came up in the injury report, it for like any of the update, it just says no.
No,
literally the word no. Like, are they not able to go? Like, it just says no. Anyways,
We don't really care about Drew Rahm because obviously he's not been great whenever in the spring so far, anyway. So,
him and I don't think are in the plans this year.
And then with the other concern, too, I mean, you mentioned injuries, but we also, and not to get too deep into this, but we also have potential age related declines as well. You know, we have an aging population. Just
and this is one of the reasons why, like, again, I didn't say it earlier, but this is one of the reasons why. This is one of the reasons why I've been very pissed off at Mizalok and Marmol as well. I feel like you're wasting Arenado and Goldschmidt. Goldschmidt, 2 years ago, before we had the decline, like last year's decline, when we had a good season with Albert coming back, but obviously couldn't get anything done in the playoffs, right? At that point in time, you had Nolan Arenado, who opted in. You had Goldschmidt, you know, is only going to have like really two good peak years left, right? Coming off MVP. And I just feel like you're kind of wasting it. It's just like in OJ, I know you don't want to hear it, but Adam, we talked about it all the time. Not getting a receiver for Mahomes. You're wasting the greatness of Mahomes with the best defense that ever played. But that being said, they won the freaking Super Bowl. So the Cardinals could potentially, with this roster, be able to do it. You know what I mean? It's opening day, right? So we're 0-0. We don't know what this team could be. It could be a 100-win team. It could be a team that goes out and breaks the 121-game record. It could be that type of team. We just don't know. But it has to be that first game and in going from there. Yeah, but hopefully getting everybody healthy in that process.
You know what I mean? But with those injuries and how that may impact us too, you know, the things that come to mind, obviously Tommy Edmund and Dufour being out, you know, that definitely impacts our lineup for sure, first and foremost.
I agree.
Obviously, Edmund, who was projected to be the starter in center field, and with Nootbaar, you know, he was obviously slated to contribute significantly outfield. That, you know, but they both offer speed and on base potential, and that's going to be, you know, I don't know, that could potentially reduce our offensive, you know, versatility and depth overall.
Potency,
especially in the early season, you know, especially now that we're going up against some teams that are going to be very, very hard out the gate. It's not like we're going to have an easy schedule initially.
OJ, so what's your take on these injuries? I mean, do you think that obviously we know that, you know, the three that I mentioned most likely besides Tommy Edman will be back sooner rather than later. But I mean, do you think that it's going to have a real big impact at the beginning of the season that could potentially linger towards the middle of the season? What's your thought process?
Well, let me think. So it definitely could. I mean, we're pretty sure Sonny Gray will miss at least one start, right? Maybe two.
For sure. I don't know.
So we have to see how the hamstring goes with him. But, you know, if he misses one game, this one game. Lars Nootbaar probably is about the same, at least from what I've seen everybody saying. Apparently cracked ribs can heal pretty quick. So, you know, I think it will affect the first couple of games because the outfield picture looks really murky right now. As much as we'd like to have Victor Scott up ASAP, he has like 60 games at Double A, and that's the highest level he's played at. So he has no Triple A experience. He didn't hit like crazy good at Double A either. I do really enjoy watching him in the outfield. He seems like an absolute stud out there. But I think that he might be really fucking bad with the bat right now at the MLB level, and I don't want to stunt his growth. Because if he can develop a little power, he's shown the ability to walk. So if he can develop just a little bit of power to keep pitchers honest, then he could be kind of an on-base machine and a stud center fielder. So like, give him the chance to develop because he could be a really fucking good player, and you might make him only like a useful player if you start him in the MLB now. So, you know, what's their outfield looking like then? It's like a Walker and Wright. Probably Carlson in center, and then what, Burleson in left?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it's going to have to be, because that's the only, like, when I'm looking at the roster and who, you know, they're probably going to bring in the 40-man, right? That's what makes sense. But if one of them gets injured too, then what the hell do you do? You know, so there's just a lot of question marks when it comes to it. You know, you lose two of your main utilities for the outfield. You know, you just don't know what's going to end up happening.
Now, Donovan can play in the outfield a little bit, so he might pick up some time there. But you'll probably see him, Burleson, and maybe if they carry him, which they might, Ciani, because he's actually a good outfielder, but he probably can't hit for shit yet. So, you know, might see him out there some. But, yeah, I think that the outfield might be pretty bad. Like, I really didn't want to see a repeat of 2023 where you're trying Alec Burleson and left and Jordan Walker and right, like that sound. And you know, Dylan Carlson, in my opinion, is more of a corner outfielder than the center fielder, even though
100% agree. Mm-hmm.
At least he looks like it speed wise even though his numbers say he's actually like pretty solid in center. So like, I don't hate having him out there, but if you got a cover for two guys that aren't super good in the field, I'd like to have somebody that is like a really exceptional center fielder, like
And to your point, right? Like Dylan Carlson being in center works when you have like an O'Neal in left field who's just got a ridiculous amount of speed that can cover ground. You know what I mean? Because then you know that you're only covering one area. So it's like when I play softball, the two people that are fast in the outfield, myself and my cousin, we cover the center positions. I'm a better outfielder, if I'm being quite frank, than the left fielder, but it's because we have better range that I'm in right center, not left field. You know, there's no reason to have me in left and RJ, my cousin, in right or left center, excuse me, when you put weakness into the right center or speed deficit in those positions, right? Because then we're having to cover the entire side of the field. So to that point, if you know that you're having two guys that are minimalistic when it comes to speed, we know Jordan Walker, he's got a little bit, right? But we don't know if base running speed is completely different than covering an outfield. You know what I mean? It's just completely different two types of speeds. So, you know, you can run in these paths, but being able to track down a ball in the range of that is completely different. And I don't think that Dylan Carlson is that type of guy without having, to your point, OJ, somebody that can kind of help out. You know, that's why I do believe I think he would be like an O'Neal in that sense. That would be a great left fielder or a right fielder as well, and be able to cover some ground, you know, take some pressure off the center fielder.
Right. Absolutely. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Corner probably for him. But anyway, the point is, I think the outfield might be very negatively affected at the beginning of the year.
Definitely.
I think,
which is unfortunate.
With the pitching, because Zach Thompson's kind of done some stuff that are making him look a lot better all of a sudden. Like, I think he's getting, from what I've read, he's getting more ride on his fastball. I think it might be up in velocity a little bit too. And then I think he reshaped his curveball. I think he added a changeup. That's what it was. He added a changeup. So, like, he's a little bit more of an interesting pitcher. And he'll probably see some action with Sonny Gray missing some time. Like, I could see him slotting into Gray's spot, essentially, in the rotation until Gray gets back. And so that might be kind of interesting to watch. And hopefully we can get through. I mean, the Padres just, you know, beat up on Yamamoto. So maybe we could do the same.
Yeah, for sure. Again, it's never a guarantee. So let's actually take a look ahead and see kind of what our expectations are or our predictions are for this upcoming season. OJ, you know, what's your thoughts for this upcoming year? Do you think we're going to be better than last year? I mean, obviously the hope is going to be there, but, you know, do you think that this roster can do it, and you have any predictions for the team?
So I don't know if I want to. Yeah, so I definitely think they can do it. Let's put that out there first. I think they'll be better than last year because I think that they have, first of all, they had a lot of bad luck, I think, last year. And some of that will come back. But then I'm also, since we don't know either way yet, I'm choosing to believe that they're going to fix their mistakes from last season and be much better on the base paths and defensively. If they are not, they're going to have a crappy season. If they are, I think they're solidly within that 85 to 90 win range, which probably can win you the division, get you the playoffs. So
I think get you the playoffs, maybe not necessarily the division, but it depends on how the division is this year. And I feel like it's been kind of a wild card for us, so to speak, you know what I mean, that aspect things.
Yeah.
Adam, what's your thoughts and, you know, predictions going into the future or going into the season?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think we can certainly improve over last year's performance overall, because, I mean, last year it was very lackluster for sure. I mean, we definitely have had some roster changes. There's been, you know, some player development as well. But for sure, the injuries, you know, at least initially are a concern. I don't really want to get off to a bad start. It concerns me a little bit on that, you know, kind of getting behind the ball there. But I think overall, though, we have the roster that we could at least be a contender in our division. You know, and predicting, like, you know, wins and losses, it's going to be challenging because there's so many variables, you know, involved at this point. But I still think that we could probably be in the, you know, mid to high 70s. because, you know, and I think that we potentially could make a playoff berth, but I think it's probably going to be like maybe another wild card berth type thing, such scenario again, potentially. That's just my, you know, my take. Obviously, yeah. It's very unpredictable going into the season, but I think that the outcome will definitely be very influenced on how we can navigate through all these uncertainties, you know, that we have, because we don't necessarily have the depth in some of these areas that we made some points at, to like tonight, about, you know, our outfield right now. It's concerning that we have a couple guys injured, and how does that impact us, and how long of an impact that's going to be, and also in our lineup, you know, who can potentially replace them. If we had some more depth per se, I wouldn't be nearly as concerned, but at the same time, I think that as long as we stay healthy, I think, and we can navigate through those variables, I think that we can at least have as good of a season last year, if not better, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do believe that we're going to be better than last year, but I don't think it's going to be by that much. So I kind of have this predicted like 5 to 10 games under 500 for the season. Obviously last year we finished minus 20 in that aspect. So I do believe it's going to be a little bit better. I just don't think it's going to be that much better. I think there's going to be a lot more mediocrity that we see in, for the Cardinal standard at least. And I believe that we're going to see some good stretches, but they're not going to outlast the bad stretches, if that makes sense. I just feel that we're going to see a lot of 500 ball, and then we're going to see some, like, you know, we're going to lose 7-8 games in a row. We might win like 3 or 4, but with, again, those long losing streaks, I feel, are potentially going to outweigh the winning streaks. It's just kind of how my feeling and my gut is on the coming of the season, but who knows? Hopefully I'm wrong, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I think you will be.
Yeah, hopefully. I want to be wrong. Well, let's transition here and talk a little bit about the Blues. Again, another team not necessarily looking stellar. Go through some of the quick updates here. So they're 36-30-3 for 75 points. That is 7-6-1 since our last session. They are now 6th in the Central, which is they were 4th last time we talked. So they've lost ground to 2 positions. 18 points behind the Jets in the Central. That's also losing ground by 2 points. We're 4 points now out of the last wild card spot, which is moving us down 2 spots as well. We are 10th in the West. That moves us 2 spots down. You're going to see that. And we are 19 points behind the Canucks, which amazingly, we've actually gained ground on the West. We were 20 points behind the Canucks last session. Now we're 19 points behind. But in the NHL, we're 19th. That is lost traction from 17th to 19th. So lost 2 positions there. We are, again, 19th. And we are 22 points behind Boston, whom is in the lead in the NHL. And we have lost traction in that as well, plus 2. So not looking necessarily great. We know that the elimination bar is coming very quickly at this point in time. So let me just get to the question here, especially around the Blues. You know, I'll start with you, OJ. Should they have made any moves at the deadline? What's your opinion on this?
I still don't think they needed to make any moves at the deadline. Just because the deal for Buchnevich wasn't there, and apparently nobody wanted, like, Marco Scandella. Which can't really blame them at this point.
Right.
But, yeah, other than that, I think you'd be making trades to make trades, which probably isn't the way to go. Like, I do think that when you're trying to get some of these organizations back, like, I think it's good to take that whole Hippocratic Oath type thing where you don't do no harm first, right? Which is kind of why I wasn't a huge fan of the Berube firing, because Armstrong even said himself, basically, he's doing it just to try and shake shit up. Like, well,
yeah, protect his job.
Problem, you're not helping yourself by getting rid of him. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it does seem like Bannister's done a fairly good job since he took over, though. And I mean, I think they've won like 5 of their last 6. The only one they dropped was the one before this to Colorado, which they barely lost. They looked like the better. Well, I don't want to say the better. They looked like a playoff game between 2 evenly matched teams. It was honestly a great game. And they just,
we actually were leading there for a little bit.
Yeah, they just weren't quite able to pull it out. So, you know, yeah, there was some
questionable. Well, and the Avs have been on one, too. They won, at that point, I think, like 7 in a row with that game. So.
Yeah, and I was extremely impressed with how the Blues played them. So,
yeah,
there is some hope, but, you know, they are still – they still need some teams in front of them to lose. But I'm the person that I don't think you should ever let go of a standard of excellence if you can help it. So I'm not, like, looking to just – get rid of everybody and start over from scratch, because then you have to develop that culture again. And that's hard to do. I think it's a lot harder than people realize.
That's harder than getting players. You know what I mean? Like that could potentially do something. You can go out and grab an all-star team. It doesn't mean they're going to win the cup, you know, especially in hockey. So I think, and I'm kind of in the same wavelength, OJ, you know, it's like, who would we have traded for? What would we have traded for? You know, nothing made sense. So absolutely not. I don't think that there's really any reason to make a move. You know, if you move Buchnevich, what are you going to get out of it? How's it going to really help you? You know what I mean? Like, I just don't think it would. So I agree with standing pat the way we did.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Adam, what's your take? I mean, did you believe that we needed to make any moves?
Well, considering the circumstances and obviously the strategy of Armstrong, I think the decision not to trade at the deadline really aligns with the long-term vision of the team, really. You know, our focus has been on asset acquisition. Obviously, we're evaluating younger talent like, you know, Zach Dean and Kessel, and obviously we didn't trade off Booch as well. I think that, to me, it really suggests a commitment to actually developing a competitive team for the future rather than the short-term gains, for sure. You know, if we had a team where we could, you know, we actually have a potential to get into the playoff run, if we could actually had that locked up, so to speak, the decision not to make a trade would indicate, you know, obviously our ability to compete or not. But the fact is, if they were struggling and not making a trade, I think that would be, I guess what I'm trying to say is basically, if we were in a spot where we were on the cusp of trying to win, go into the playoffs and win, we would need to find those weak points and obviously make some trades to make that happen. But I think that we're looking at the long-term evaluation of it all, is what I'm trying to say. That's kind of my point.
And back totally to makes
point,
sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously your point about roster needs as well. There weren't really any urgent needs that needed to be addressed that the market would take care of that situation, especially without overpaying or actually sacrificing, you know, our future assets as well. Like, it doesn't make sense. And it really didn't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
Hopefully the Blues can continue their winning ways. It's going to be interesting to see how obviously the season progresses here. Let's move on to our next St. Louis team, and that is STL City. Games are underway right now. You know, I guess to get our thoughts so far. I mean, they're fifth in the West. They're 1-3-0 for 6 total points. You know, I guess I'll start with my thoughts on this so far. I just really haven't seen the offensive spark that we saw last year for multiple games. They're playing pretty well defensively. They're you know, playing at least to the level they had last year. It's been tough because I just haven't seen the offense really be able to do what I think that they need to do. A lot of missed opportunities. And when it feels like, hey, cool, we got some, you know, continuity in the offense, then our defense isn't doing all that well. And that's why we end up tying these games. I mean, we've only got one win. We've no loss, which is great, but, you know, 3 ties in a row or whatever. Right. It's just not the greatest when it comes to that. Right. So to me, that's where it's just a struggle because it happens a lot in soccer, getting ties, and ties are points. You know what I mean? That
absolutely
could,
they are.
Eventually you get wins, then all of a sudden those ties make a difference. But sooner rather than later, you need
still to need to be winning.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, so that's kind of like my thoughts on it. OJ, what's your thoughts so far in the season for City?
Well, so I do think City's had a bit of a tough schedule early on. Like Houston Dynamo, as far as I know, is pretty good. And so you had to excuse me. I think I might be getting them confused. Yeah, because we had them in CONCACAF, not MLS. thing. But we had New York. So New York FC actually is a pretty easy beat. Austin, we thoroughly outplayed in their place, but because we gave up two really bad, and that's where an area they struggled badly this year is so far is with defending like free kicks and set pieces, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And that's really all it was. Austin's entire offense came off both their goals. I think they had like two shots on goal and they both went in. They were both off set pieces. So it's like, other than that, we smoked them in their butt. And then this past game against LA Galaxy, who is a much better team than last year, again at LA, tie them. That's a pretty, and it was a 3-3 match too. Bicycle kick.
Was a sweet goal. Yeah, that was.
That Nielsen goal was ridiculously good. Was sweet. Yeah.
Like we got
dude. I don't even think he actually realized that he made it in. That was the crazy part. Like the reaction on his face, like, did it actually get in? Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he was that was throwing everything at the wall. And
That was like highlight reel of the week, you know, for MLS.
Yeah, that was he actually got goal of the match or goal of the match day.
Goal of the exactly. Yeah.
But my point is I do think they've stepped up generally on defense quite a bit. The Austin game, they were behind 2-1 for a good portion of the game. And the way I saw City move the ball upfield, like really quickly and with a high degree of skill, like they looked like a completely different team from last season. Like last season, they had to beat you with the press. And if you just gave them the ball, they couldn't necessarily do a lot with it. But with the emergence of Celio Pompeu, the additions of Totland and Deer and Durkin, has really shored up a lot for this team. So, like, and Totland in particular is just very fucking impressive. Remember, they're doing this. They played Galaxy without Leuven or Tim Parker. Right. Or Tim Parker, they're back. When they are fully healthy and they got their 100% starting 11, I think they're actually a pretty damn good team. They just had a tough schedule so far, and I think they've acquitted themselves pretty well. Yeah. So, as they get to a little softer – running the schedule, I bet you see they start putting away more points. I think you're going to see them score a lot more against some of these teams that aren't as good. So there you have.
That's definitely the hope. You know, Adam, what's your thoughts here so far in the season?
I agree with what OJ was saying. And in addition to that, you know, we also have to consider that we've had a couple trades as well, with Stroud and Bartlett, and then obviously with Gigini transferring out of the club as well. That was were significant moves. So for me, there's definitely some room for improvement for sure. And the team's lack of like high end chance creation definitely has become evident. You know, if you look at this, there's definitely been a decrease in the number of games where we're scoring like more than two goals. And, you know, it's getting to the point where it's like, where's our offense at? For sure. It's lacking. So they need to create more chances for sure. But I'm hopeful that, you know, looking forward, I'm glad that we're tying right now. It's better than losing for sure. But I think that there'll be some improvements as we continue our season into the spring. I mean, I think we have a pretty good chance, obviously, of defeating DC on Saturday. They're not a great team. And then, you know, looking at the future here, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a rocky, you know, a couple games that'll be rough. But I think the overall, I anticipate we're going to see some improvement. I'm not too concerned yet. It's still pretty early in the season.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not the season where we were last year, but that was an anomaly, you know, that we were doing so great out of the gate, per se.
For sure, especially for a new franchise team.
Right. I mean, the fact is if you look at it point wise, we're in third. You know what I mean? Well, I guess fourth technically or whatever. But anyway.
Well, yeah. Fifth, but yeah.
Is it fifth now? Okay, my bad.
Yeah, it's fifth because of the goal differential and stuff. Yeah.
Is it? Oh, because probably who are we tied with point wise?
Give me 1 second. I literally just had this pulled up. Okay, I gotta get the West We're tied with Galaxy and Sporting. And actually, I think Galaxy, the reason why they're ahead of us is just from...
Because it's head-to-head.
No, because they don't really... I mean,
I thought it was like head-to-head whenever you're going, but there's hosted there, or there was some rule about how they get the upper hand or whatever, something crazy.
So they do that if everything across the board is even, but they do have 9 goals for and 7 goals away. We have 8 goals for and 6 goals away.
Okay, so that makes sense. Less goal, okay.
Yeah, so less
goals goal away. Yeah, okay, mm-hmm. Got it. Okay, yeah. Fair enough. But still, I don't think there's a reason to panic.
Yeah, I don't think so.
We're sitting right there in the you know, in the mid right there for making the final, you know, at the playoffs per se, which that's so far away. We got so much more soccer to play between now and then. So no, I'm not concerned. We're still scoring points. We're still getting points.
Alrighty, guys. Well, let's go ahead and head on to our sign off here. Adam, would you like to hit the listeners here with our socials?
I would love to tell them all about how they can hit us up on the social media networks known as Facebook. First and foremost, check us out, facebook.com/thehometownlosers. That's spelled LOUSERS. You can also check us out on x.com/hometownlosers, or check us out actually just on our website. It's thehometownlosers.com. And be sure to share out the link with, you know, any family, friends, whomever, anybody that's into sports. They can give us, you know, some feedback on the website as well as listen to all of our latest content. We'd love to be able to hear from everybody. So check us out there.
Appreciate that, and please do. We love listening, hearing from the listeners, and obviously we love getting the questions. We had the mailbag segment recently. Yep. The
really enjoyed that.
One of the best segments. Yeah. So yeah. Please keep that coming. We definitely love the interaction with the show. OJ, why don't you hit up the listeners with your game of the week?
Yeah. So on Saturday, St. Louis City plays DC United at 7:30. But obviously the playoffs. Playoff race trumps all, so St. Louis Blues versus Minnesota also on Saturday at 1 p.m. So that's your game. Wow.
I'm looking forward to that. So
they got to win it. They basically just had to keep winning it if they want to stay in it.
Absolutely. So, got to win it. So I'm excited.
At the Wild. So
absolutely. Well, that's great. And well, Minnesota's thanks so much for that.
Play-in. And yeah, they're directly behind us right now, so we got to win that game.
Win. Big time game.
Well, thanks so much for that, OJ. I'm going to send it over now to Josh for this week's
Stat Blast.
All right, guys. So I got two of them here for you. Again, one about the numbers and one that's just kind of an interesting factoid in sport. So this one is I'm going to start with that factoid first. Very interesting one. When I read it, I could not believe this was the case. So in NASCAR, when they are pumping their tires or, you know, how they fill the tires, they actually don't use compressed air like you would use for your everyday car. They use nitrogen. And the reason why is because half a pound of nitrogen is equivalent to 4 pounds of pressure of compressed air. It leads to more traction. It leads to better traction control and less leakage as well. In fact, as the tires heat up, the nitrogen bonds with the rubber, and that causes better traction and more durability for the tire. Thought that was a very interesting fact. So
that is interesting.
And again, not something that you would ever think of, you know, using nitrogen in tires.
I mean,
and stuff like that.
Well, I've seen that, like, you know, when I'm getting my oil changed or whatever, and they're like, you know, there's an option up there that says like nitrogen filled tires or whatever. I have seen that, but I'm like, what's really the benefit of that for me? But I could see it like from a sporting perspective though, because obviously that has, you know, having stability and
competitive advantage. Yeah,
there's a competitive advantage. I probably not as much, nearly as much for like a, you know, a passenger vehicle, but I have seen that before, so that's interesting. Never even
really not to mention that nitrogen is lighter than oxygen too, so
it is. Yeah, you know? And obviously that all plays, and whenever you're dealing with, you know, nanoseconds, so to speak, or, you know, of you're trying to shave off like any potential amount of time, so those things add up, especially when you're out there on the track for hours on end.
All right. I'll go to the stats side of this. So obviously the NHL has been around for over 100 years. There is a lot and a lot of goals that have happened. But there's only been 10 goalies that have ever scored a goalie goal in the NHL. And crazy enough, two of them didn't even actually shoot the puck towards the net. They made a save and a like somebody was sweeping off and trying to pass it back to the defenseman, missed and hit an empty net. So it counted as a goalie goal.
Wow.
I thought that was very interesting with all the stats that we have on there and the athleticism these goalies have. Only 10 of them have scored. So if you see one, you are witnessing something that it does not happen very often, for sure.
Yeah.
That's what I like to have in Hofer, because he scored one in the minors. I think
yes,
in the the AHL team. So, yeah, I like having that guy around.
Charlie Lindgren did as well recently, yeah.
Oh, no shit. In the NHL or was it in the AHL?
Yeah, it's in the NHL. He just did it.
Oh, he scored a goal in the NHL? Sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on Monday.
I didn't hear about that. All right.
Yep. Well, didn't hear about that either, yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yep, he went for an empty net goal, and he won it. He got
it. That's exactly how I want my goalie to be. If you got an open net, take the shot.
Yes, Charlie Lindgren did. So just FYI, it happened this Monday.
Yeah.
That's what the one thing about Martin Brodeur, who, you know, out of all of his accolades, you know, chasing 700 wins and all this stuff, you know, the accolades, yes, he does have 3 goals on his roster or on his resume, which is pretty freaking impressive.
For a
goalie, 3 goals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty impressive. And that's not including playoff games, too, because I think he's got 2 in the playoffs as well.
Yeah. That's
ridiculous.
Crazy. Somebody,
all right, guys.
Go ahead. Now we can sign off. It's all good.
Okay. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, again, appreciate your time. As always, it's always fun to talk to you guys, especially about the St. Louis sports. And we had a lot to catch up on. So we will get back to it next week here on the Hometown Losers podcast. Please reach out to the socials and interact with us. And hope you all have a great night.
Hey guys, this is Adam. Just want to say thanks for listening to the Hometown Losers podcast. We'll see you next week as we continue our discussion of St. Louis sports.